So welcome everyone and thank you for coming tonight. As is our usual practice, before we get into any formal teaching, I'd like to give an opportunity, if anybody new or old has any questions about the practice of meditation, the practices of mindfulness, not just only sitting and walking, but mindfulness in life, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, the whole gamut of mindfulness practice, or just in general in terms of how to apply the practices of Buddha Dharma and mindfulness to the situations that we deal with in life, which is where the challenge is, in a certain sense. Coming together on a Sunday night and practicing together like this is easy. It's kind of ideal. Often the conditions in which we practice in daily life are not so ideal, a little messier. So oftentimes it's good to ask questions if you're not clear about how to apply the practices to bring better, more clarity, more openness, more harmony, greater peace, less suffering in one's daily life. So anybody have any questions about practice? Please don't be shy. I know we're not perfect. I'm obviously in the presence of a deeply enlightened group, so I am humbled. Good. So when I was here a couple of weeks ago, the fifth teaching of Thich Nhat Hanh that I shared with you was you are enough. You have enough. You have enough. Again, as I said, these are pith teachings, meaning they are only a few words, but they have a great capacity for meaning and liberation. The mantra, you have enough, which translates for each of us as, I have enough, immediately underscores any sense of deficiency, less than, neediness, and encourages us to live in a state of fullness, right? Of satisfaction, of gratitude, of completeness, of wholeness, which are, we could say, are all the mind states that one cultivates and realizes through the practices of meditation, mindfulness, concentration, and insight. One comes to this kind of realization naturally, but before we get there, we need often these little pith teachings to kind of clarify exactly how to practice and how to live. When you have when you have had a good meal, right, and you feel satisfied, you feel good, right, you have a sense of well-being, right, if you've eaten well. Doesn't mean you've stuffed yourself, means you've eaten well. Food was good, just the right amount. You feel, right, you feel comfortable, sense of well-being. And if somebody came and said, would you like some more? You might say to them, what? No. Why? I feel good. So when you live from that sense of goodness, of fullness, of richness, of ease, of well-being, so much of what's trying to get our attention, meaning not only external forces trying to get our attention, giving us a message that we're not enough and we need more, but also even those kind of hungry ghosts inside us, you know, the ones we're talking about, that are always whispering in our ears and telling us, this moment, this person, this life, this relationship, this house, me, I'm not enough. This moment is not enough. I need more. If I had more, then it would be good. But that that little imp that whispers in our ear that is immediately blown away by the mantra, I have enough. Or we could say, I am enough. I have enough, I am enough. Now, did anybody in practicing it find out that it was too difficult to practice or that it's an incorrect mantra? That neediness, dissatisfaction are really the way to go? Did anybody have any positive success with using the mantra? Yes. How'd it do, Gary?
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and it, because just very quickly, it did what for you? So again, I'd say what he's saying is good. One, it is as a kind of general mantra. Just by repeating it from time to time is good prevention. It keeps that sense of well-being foremost in the mind. But it's also, again, can be helpful as an antidote, as a medicine. Again, when those feelings, ideas, needs, wants, messages arise that try to create some at easement in us, uncomfortableness within us, that we do try to satisfy by going outside of ourselves to get something to make us feel good or whole. Again, the message of Buddhism, going back to the Buddha originally, was each of us is whole. Just as we are. We don't need anything. We don't need to make ourselves whole. Right? We don't need to fix our cracks. In our true nature, we are uncracked. We are unbroken. We are whole. We are complete. And that is something that's not that hard to experience. If one lets go of, relaxes from that sense of dissatisfaction, neediness, wantedness. Because again, it's very easy for one. One can be happy at home, right? Happy with life, happy with their situation. And all of a sudden start thinking in a certain way, gee, if I had this in my life, it would be better. If only I had that, or if I was that, or other people have this. And in 5 minutes, where's your peace and equanimity? Gone. Gone. I mean, nothing's changed. Only thing that's changed is what? Your thoughts. And what's changed about your thoughts is you're all of a sudden you're looking at life situation in a very diametric way than you were 5 minutes ago. And your mood changes and your feeling tone changes. And from that your behavior can change and the way you act behaves. And all because of what? Some thoughts that all of a sudden appeared in your mind. And what's a thought? Nobody knows. Now, how can I say that? Because we talk about thoughts all the time, but if you stop and try to look at one and grab one and hold on to one, what happens? What do you find? I mean, this is easily understandable and experienced by everybody and anybody here. Next time a thought arises in your mind, grab a hold of it or look at it and ask yourself, what is this thought? And you may be surprised by what you see. It may not be a substantial, real, solid, permanent, it may not be anything. And if that's the case, then why do I let them change my mood, change my view, change the way I feel, change the way I act so quickly? Anyhow, it's something worth looking at. Anybody else have an experience with I am enough? Yes.
My mood changed quickly because I was lying in the long-term care lady came, and she was saying, now, if I want to get your diaper changed, you know, the whole fear thing was instilled in my equanimity.
Mm-hmm.
So if one is so easily, if one's equanimity is so disturbed by fear, then there's something that is not understood about thoughts, because just the, like you were saying last time you were here, there are 10,000 commercials one hears every day, but one long-term care lady would just say, well, you, she didn't say you don't have enough, but she implied as much.
Yeah.
And if you're going to want to live in a decent way,
mm-hmm.
you've got to make all these changes and panic, and I sort of thought about doing that.
Thought about panicking?
Well, you know, I was, you know, fear was instilled in.
Yeah, now again, the experience of I have enough, that I am enough, or that basically everything is okay in an intrinsic way, is not a palliative. It's not a drug. It's not something that we just lay down and let everything just roll over us and never make any decisions. I mean, that's not what this is about. It means, but it sort of means that I don't make my decisions from just what you said, from a sense of panic, right? Obviously, we have to make decisions in life, right? We have to make choices in life, and we have to somewhat be aware that we do have a future, and so therefore, you know, there has to be obviously some decision making that we make in life, right? And that's normal. But if you think about how we often people make those major decisions or even small decisions, it's often from a place of less than, a place of fear, a place of panic, a place of, oh, if I get this, then everything will be all right, which is what they're selling you. Right? To me, the simplest answer to questions about the future, it will always be, whatever happens, I will deal with it. Which is what? Which is the truth. Because all of us, in the present, we deal with situations as they arise, right? Good situations, bad situations. We have to deal with whatever is in front of us, right? And if we come from a place of integrity, and if we come from a place of wholeness, and if we come from a place of clarity, and right, we are capable of responding to situations. Obviously, you know, if you've made choices in something that help the ground for that, that may make some of the things easier. I mean, but the bottom line is, even if we, as we know, make the wisest decisions in anticipation of the future, do we know the future? We don't know it, right? But you'll have all kinds of people who always are trying to prepare you for the worst case scenario. I mean, that's what insurance is about, right, Doug? I mean, it's kind of a gamble, right? But the truth is, one doesn't know, right? All one knows is averages and means and statistics and stuff like that, but doesn't know. And again, you understand that that person is going beyond the realm of rationality and trying to produce a sense of panic. And a sense of inevitability about how the future is going to unfold. But none of us know how the future is going to unfold, and we don't know if we're going to wake up tomorrow. Right? I mean, it doesn't mean not knowing whether I'm going to wake up tomorrow, I abandon everything. that would be going to the other extreme. So again, the whole idea of I am enough, I have enough, is again that the choices, the decisions we make in life come from the sense of wholeness, of we're not panicking. Right? Well, we'll say, well, thank you very much. And then I'll think about it. Right? That's all. And, if one knows how to be at peace within oneself, right? If one knows how to be at ease with circumstances, then even the most difficult circumstances, the most painful circumstances, can be dealt with. But if one doesn't have that capacity, then life becomes even more difficult than it presents itself. I remember talking to somebody not too long ago who was afraid, somehow all their money would run out. And they'd, had this worst case scenario. But, if you know, right, that to be happy, to be at ease, to be at calm, we don't really need much, do we? Then even the idea of losing most of what we have and just being forced to live at the basic necessities of life would just be what? It wouldn't be something we would choose, right, for ourselves or anybody else. But if it happened to us, we would what? We would deal with it, and we would do our best. Right? And no matter how bad our situation is, we all have the capacity of helping other human beings, don't we? I mean, I think that is what all of us ultimately find most meaningful in life. Helping another human being, being there for others. Well, the same situation. So again, these scenarios, they're nonsense. How many people who have acquired some means and have good jobs and houses and cars say, God, when I was 19 and didn't have anything, I think I was happier. The more I've gotten has really made me happier. Right? I mean, that's not an uncommon experience for people to say, as their life has gotten more complicated, as they've had more things. And that doesn't necessarily produce more happiness, more well-being. Obviously, it can produce the opposite. So we have to remember that. That's why this mantra is a good mantra. I have enough. Then nobody can scare you. Nobody can panic you. You stand your ground, but your ground is a ground of knowing that one doesn't need much to be happy, to be at ease, and to live a life of goodness, right? So let me just say that I'm in the different sanghas I go around, I'm trying to teach different ones, and I know they're being recorded, so I'm not going to do all of them here. But in some of the other sanghas, I've done other wonderful mantras, such as this one. This one gets a fold out. This is a great mantra. I can't tell you which are more powerful, but this is a great mantra. Right? That could even have been used in your situation or with the long-term care lady. Are you sure? Because we, our thoughts tend to appear as definitive statements. And our words often manifest as definitive statements. When we simply ask ourselves in our perception of ourselves, perception of a situation, to say, am I sure? Absolutely sure that this person is doing this, or this person means that, or this is what's going on in this person's head, or this is the way something's going to turn out, or even this is how it happened in the past, or this is the way my childhood was. I mean, am I absolutely 100% sure that this is the way it was, is, will be? And the answer pretty much mostly would come out what? No. And believing something is true and acting upon it is true often provokes us into activity and feeling states that are very, that are productive of misery for ourselves and others. Am I sure? Do I know this is true? Really opens things up. Frees us from a lot of burdens that are self-created. Another way of looking at this is turning all thoughts, suppositions, perceptions, all our truths into hypotheses. Remember, anybody remember geometry or logic? Right? A hypothesis is what?
A working explanation.
A theorem is what? Something true. A theorem is like a truth or a proof or something. I don't know. But anyhow. But the basic sense is that all thought are tentative. They're hypotheses. And the truth of anything can only be found in what? In life. That's where it plays out, in life, in experience. So are you sure? Am I sure? Very powerful. And another one I did in another sangha was... But again, these will all be on the website to listen to. Very powerful mantra. This is it. This is what? Anything that's happening right in front of you, right now. That's the this. It is what? The totality of your life. So, this mantra reminds us that whatever is happening right now, this is it. This is our life. Right? There's nothing else. Past is gone. Future hasn't come. It's all just made up. The only thing we can truly know is that this moment is my moment. Moment for what? To be alive. I don't have a life outside of this moment, right? Right? I mean, all your thoughts about the past are just thoughts, memories, suppositions, hypotheses about things that have occurred already. They are not happening. They don't exist. All our fantasies, expectations, worries about the future, again, just made up. Right? The only thing that we know, the only place that we are alive is right now. This is it. So that's why we practice living in the present moment. Why? Because this is where our life is unfolding. If I can't be here, if I'm up in my thoughts about life, I'm not in life, I'm in my thoughts about life. I'm not in the present, I'm in the past or the future. Then I'm not really alive, am I? Because my life is here. And if I want to truly be alive, then I have to be 100% present to this. If I want to be a good person, I can only be good now. If I want to be a compassionate person, I can only be compassionate now. This is it. If I want to change, anybody here want to change something about themselves? Well, you can only change now. You can't change in the past. And who knows if you'll ever change in the future. Change only occurs in the now, because something is happening that is different in the now. You can't change anywhere else. That's why so many people talk about change, think about change, but never change. Because change can only occur now. You want to be different? Be different now. Then there's a good chance that you may be different in the future because you've made change in the now. This is it. So here we've taught just you are enough, I am enough. But then also on the website will be a commentary on this is it and am I sure? And then last week in St. Pete I did pieces every step. So that's... But I thought I'd move into a little bit of the interpersonal. If you know, Thich Nhat Hanh is... he likes to take Dharma practice into that realm. This is in the chapter called Compassion and Healing. So let's do this little one over here. Can you see that, Don? Can you read that out loud?
Yes, I am here for you.
Interesting mantra that Thich Nhat Hanh wrote. I am here for you. Very powerful mantra. Very has great power to transform our life and our relationships, just in those simple words. I would say I think the power of these kinds of teachings is that they are diametrically opposite the way worldly knowledge carries on, right? So, or we could say the world of self, the world of ego, the world of self-centeredness carries on. Because most of us, when we're lost in our egocentricity, we think everything we say is right, right? And all our perceptions about the other person are absolutely right. And if anybody argued us, we'd say, you're absolutely wrong. Are you sure? Yes, I am sure. This is the way it happened. And you're a so-and-so, and you did the, you know, I am absolutely sure. Yes. You know, are your political beliefs right and they're totally wrong? Absolutely, I am totally sure. So throughout our world, I am sure is the mantra of worldly people. So are you sure? Can you see? Breaks it down, opens it up. Just the same way, this is it. Is 100% opposite than the way we're taught. Because we're taught to what? You are who what? You are who you were, or you are who you're going to be, or live for the future, think about the future, have expectations for the future, have goals for the future, always be living to try to get somewhere, right? Or to get away from somewhere, or, you know. So this is it. Cuts through all that. The way we usually live. And again, of course, as we've said in the commentary before, I have enough is diametrically opposite to the ethos of our consumer culture and even our psychological culture. Okay. I am here for you. This is a diametrically opposite the way we often go, the way we go about relationships, right? Right? Because the way we do as relationships is what? You are here for me. Isn't that the deal? Right? See, that's the deal. You are here for me. Everybody, from the world of this, the ego, the world of self, the world of egocentricity, everything is about meeting my needs, right? And everybody I encounter, you're only here for one reason. What? For me. Right? Now, what does that mean? You are here for me. It means whatever I want, whatever I think I need, you're here to give it to me, right? If I'm here because I want to really feel good about being a Dharma teacher, right? Then you're all here for what purpose? For me, to make me feel good, to make me feel worthy, to make me feel of value, right? That's why you're here. You're here to feed my ego and its needs, if that's its agenda, right? If you're here so I can feel smart, right? Then I'm going to expostulate really smart, and I'm going to be very, and your job is what? To think I'm brilliant, right? That's your job. Right? Let's say I need to be liked, right? So everybody I meet, you're here for what purpose? To like me. To let me know I'm likable. You know, if my need is always to feel loved by everybody, then you're all here what? To love me. And make me feel loved. Right? If I'm arrogant and I'm here to feel like I'm better than everybody, then everybody I encounter is here for what? To make me feel superior. Right? I mean, do I need to go on? This is what we endlessly do, every encounter. Right? Right? If we want to be seen as the most beautiful, the most handsome, the most successful, on and on and on, right? Every encounter is about what? That. And of course, there are people who are, much worse than that. You know, all their encounters about, how can I exploit this person for my benefit? Sexual benefits, material benefits. You know, how can I get from this person? Right? Everybody is an object to get something from. For what? For me. So, consciously or unconsciously, most people, and again, there's a continuum. Some people it's much more subtle. Other people it's much more coarse and graphic. But the kind of worldly way of relating to everyone is, you are here for me. You're here to meet my needs, make me feel good, make me happy, make me feel whatever I want to feel. Right? Is that clear? Is there anybody who disagrees with it? So this is a very powerful mantra because it opens us up to a totally different way of looking at relationship. When I'm talking about relationship, I'm not just talking about intimate relationships, I'm talking about all relationships. And it says what? Don, please, one more. Help us out. One more time.
I am here for you.
I am here for you. What if that was where we came from in our every encounter with somebody? Right? How, you know, I'm here for you. Right? You know, I'm here for your happiness, for your well-being. I'm here to make your life easier. I'm here to make you feel good. It's not about taking, it's about giving. Well, that's a rare thought, isn't it? It's not about taking, it's about giving. I am here for you. I am here for you is entering the world of non-self. When we live in the world of self, then again, everything is about me. To enter the world of non-self is to see the other as no different than oneself, is to actually see the other as oneself. So even if you believed that your mind was you, and we can talk about that some other time, but you notice your mind does watch out for your body, doesn't it? Right? Even though your mind may be at ease, if your body is not feeling well, your mind will help you, help your body. Right? We could certainly say, my mind is here for my body. I use my intelligence, I use my self-awareness to really stay in touch with the body, even though the body is physical and we could say the mind isn't. It has that relationship, right, where it sees its own body as the same as and immediately cares for the well-being of the body. And if the body is not well, it immediately wants to relieve it of its suffering. Right? It usually doesn't go, you know, well, I'm the mind. I was before the body, and after the body's gone, I will be. So therefore, what do I need to involve myself? No. Our minds are involved with the well-being of our body. And we know that healthy parts of our body, our immune system, self-regulatory systems, are there for the parts of our body that aren't well, and often work very hard to take care of the well-being of parts of our body. Right? So we know this, I am here for you. You know, the right hand is here for the left hand. The left hand is here for the right hand. Right? The heart takes care of the whole body, doesn't it? You know, the digestive system is working for the whole body. The lungs are working for the whole body. So unconsciously, our bodies are a wonderful, wonderful demonstration of I am here for you. I recognize interconnection, interbeing, non-self. What this mantra says is when we enter the world of relationship, we enter it with that same selflessness. When self-concern, self-interest, self-centeredness is not the place I'm coming from, but I come from a place of openness and interconnection with the other, right? That when I encounter, quote unquote, the other, I see the other as myself. Now, again, it certainly would be wonderful, wouldn't it, if whoever it is you're relating to practices the mantra, I am here for you. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Right? If you're practicing the mantra, I am here for you, and you're practicing the mantra, I am here for you, then you have what? Just wonderful, positive mutuality. But if we're not careful, and we live from the place of, you are here from me. Anybody ever been in a relationship like that? Either you've been that person, or the other person has been that way for you. Right? If you're in a relationship where the other person is just there to meet your needs, your happinesses, your wants, right? Are you happy? Anybody ever been like that? Are you happy? No, you can't be happy. And when you're at the receiving end of that, are you happy? No, it's built in for what? Frustration, anger, resentment, hurt, right? Disappointment, right? It's a setup. Because the other person is also a self with their needs and their wants, right? So if I'm just out for me and you're just out for you, anybody wonder why there's a lot of problems with relationships these days? I mean, it can't work, can it? But if I am here for you and you are here for me, and we both have that kind of openness and reciprocalness and responsiveness, then relationships can work, can't they? I am here for you. And again, whether these are intimate relations, whether these are parent-child relationships, child-parent relationships, friendships, or just the way we relate in general to all the people we encounter, even our society, right? I am here for you. What was it? Remember JFK, what did he say? Do not ask what you can do. Right? Do not ask what you can do for your country. Ask what.
It's not
no. Right. 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 So there he was. JFK was an early exponent of this at the national level. It kind of reminds me. It just came into my. I don't know if this is in the Buddhist tradition, one of the spiritual traditions. There's this little parable of I don't know. Somebody's getting a. Somebody wanted. I forget, is asking somebody for a tour of heaven and hell. Let me get this straight. I haven't thought of this in a while. So first he gets a tour of hell, let's say, and he goes into this room, and there's it's a big dining room table. People know this story. It's a big dining room table. It's just full of all the most delicious food. And there are lots of people around at the table, except there's one problem. See, everybody has these long arms that are like that, and they don't move. They're like sticks. So you can reach out and grab this delicious food, but you can't bend your elbow. Can you get this? You get what it's like to be there, right? So you got this big, beautiful table. You got arms that can touch and hold the food. All right. So that's hell, right? Would people agree that's hell? Okay. So then, whoever it is says, well, can I see heaven now? And so whoever is the tour guide takes them to heaven, and all of a sudden they open a door. It's the same scenario. Big table, lots of wonderful food. Everybody has these long, long arms that don't bend. Except there's one difference. They're taking the food and they're feeding each other. And that's heaven. Huh? I am here for you. Then it works, doesn't it? Even with our shortcomings. Even with our long arms, even with our rigidity, things can work. Because we're here to what? To feed each other. We're here to help each other. We're here to support each other. But if it's all about, you know, what's anybody done for me today? Then we're going down a very different road, aren't we? Rather than what can I do for others today? When you think others are here for me, it's just going to be a world of dissatisfaction, of unhappiness, misery, frustration, right? And also, you know, there's a problem when everybody is supposed to be here for us. You know what that problem is? You can't make them, right? You can't make them do it. So you end up having to be what? Very manipulative, very controlling, dominating. You know, you have to endlessly play games, right? Because, you know, not everybody is here to meet our needs. But if I think that's what everybody is here for, then I have to become a person that I probably would not want to be in relationship with. Right. If I said to everybody here, how would you like to be in relationship with somebody whose mantra is, I am here for you? Everybody want to be in a relationship with somebody whose mantra is, how many people want to be in a relationship with somebody whose mantra is, I am here for me? Now, you may already find yourself in one of those. But you see, you go, of course, no. Right? I want to be in relationship with the person who says, I'm here for you. Right? And yet what? I cannot make the other person be here for me. But I can be that person who's there for another. See, that's within our control. There's no manipulation in that. There's all that stuff doesn't have to exist. Because I can do that right away. Right? I am here for you. Oh. I can just do that. It doesn't matter whether they're here for me or not. Right? Because my mantra is what? I'm here for you. And you might find that even though the person doesn't begin understanding that mantra, let's say you're the only person in the relationship who knows this mantra, they may get it. They may get it. Because you'll be doing it differently than you've done it in the past. And they'll be relating to somebody who's doing it differently than they do it. Now again, please let me just say here, I am not talking about punitive relationships or abusive relationships. You know, we're not talking about that, okay? I am here for you. You know, in Buddhism, actually, like at the end of tonight, most of you have been here before, somebody in the Sangha makes a Dana announcement, right, about, we have to pay rent and support the Florida community and stuff like that, so we ask for donations, and we call that Dana, right, D-A-N-A, it's a Sanskrit word. But Dana, it means generosity, but it means this. This is Dana. It means a heart that is open to others, right? I am here for you means I am here for you, you need money to pay the rent, I'm here for you, right? You need emotional support, I am here for you. You need kindness, I am here for you. You need somebody to run some errands for you, I am here for you. You're sick, you know, you see what I'm saying? So the generosity is not, you know, something. Please don't think because we call our bowl over there the Dana bowl, that Dana has to do with charity. The heart of openness, the heart that does not see its interests from the interests of others, does not see its well-being as different than the well-being of others, is the what? Is the generous heart, the generous mind. And it expresses itself in myriad, myriad ways, right? In Buddhism, it's considered actually the most generous thing we can do for somebody is to give them dharma. Buddhism calls the teachings and practices dharma. Now, that doesn't mean because Buddhism has the best dharma in the world. It means any dharma. It doesn't just mean Buddhist dharma. But it means to give somebody the capacity, the teachings and the practices, so they can liberate themselves from all their own sufferings, that's considered a wonderful act of generosity. Right? And many of you here have that capacity to help other human beings in many ways. Right? So again, that dana, that spirit of generosity, that openness, that selflessness. Please, what this mantra is saying is it is expressed in its most profound way for human beings in relationship to each other. Because we have to let go, don't we? We have to let go of what? Of the primacy of ourself. And somehow thinking that if my needs are met, then what? Then I'll be happy. Then I'll be at peace. Then I'll feel good. But that's not true. Because as soon as either through good fortune or through manipulation, you get the person to meet your needs, a week later, what? It's a whole series of new needs. Right? It's just endless. So as Shantideva, the great 8th century Buddhist teacher said, he said, all the happiness of the world comes from cherishing others, loving others. All the misery of the world comes from cherishing only oneself. Interesting. Very strong statement. All the happiness of the world comes from cherishing, loving, caring others. All the misery of the world comes from self-centeredness, right? Why do we have wars? Why do we have violence? Why do we have indifference? Why do we have, all these things that we feel so bad about in our society? Why do we have it? Because people cherish just themselves, or their own family, their own clan, their own tribe, their own nation, their own religion, right? And aren't there for the other. So again, please understand, I am here for you. I am here for you. 5 words. But you can see as a living practice, it's very powerful. If you look at your life, look at your relationships to the world, you can see this gives you the key very simply. You put this together with, are you sure? Am I sure? I have enough. This is it. You have enough to practice for the rest of your lifetime. And you have the basis for leading a happy, joyful, meaningful life. Just on these very simple teachings. The second mantra in this series is, can you see a bug? This one here.
I know you're there, and I am very happy.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the second mantra. The first mantra is, I am here for you. The second mantra is, I know you are there, and I am very happy. Now, one may think, This comes after the first one, right? Oh, now that I know that you're here for me, I'm happy. I'm happy to know that you're here for me, right? So we can be very careful if we see it like there's a causal relationship here, and yeah, it's great to have somebody always there wanting to make you happy. Yeah, I'm happy now, but this is not that. This has no relationship to the first one. The first mantra just sits by itself. Right? I am here for you. Now again, please understand that this is not metaphysical, spiritual love. This is normal, right? Okay. I am here for you. That is normal between a what? I mean, how would we say, where does this appear spontaneously and naturally in life?
In a child.
parent-child. I mean, it's right there. There it is. We know. It doesn't mean that it's not always that perfectly, but we know that there is this naturalness, right? The mother, the father, tradition was the mother, now we can say the father, have that selfish relationship to the child, which is what? You're a mother? Are you, do you have to work at being there for your children? No. It comes naturally. It's you are there, right? Because you love them. You see them as part of you. So you don't, when your baby's crying in the night, you don't, or the baby's unhappy, you immediately what? Go to them. You don't think, well, there's really something on TV I'd rather see, and you don't think like that, do you? It's natural. Please understand. This type of love is natural and normal when the heart is selfless and incorporates the need of the other equal as if not more so than my own, right? All this is doing is saying it doesn't just have to be in the parent-child relationship. We can extend it everywhere. Usually, even if you see the parent having to do lots, right? And we know children take a lot of care, don't they? They have lots of needs and wants, don't they? And yet the parent is very happy to be there for their child. Right? It's not a burden. It's not an imposition. Right? Those parents who said, I'm very happy to do this, don't they? Right? Because I love this child and I want them to be happy. I want them to prosper. I want them, right? So therefore, I don't mind taking care of them. Right? Like that. So we're just talking about that, except it's no longer just in this unique relationship. I know you are there and I am very happy. So this, again, take this one separate, but take it as part of the series. Okay. I know you are there and I am very happy. So next time you are with, in the presence of, the people you live with, the people you share your home with, your family, your friends, your colleagues, to look at them and say, what? I know you are there. You know, people live with other people and do not know that there is another real, living, breathing person there. Did you know that? They don't stop. We don't stop. And just look at the other person. And just say to ourselves, I know you are there. I see you. To say to somebody, what do you want for dinner? Or, what's your schedule today? Or, why don't you pick up this on the way home? Right? Is not necessarily a recognition that you really see the other person. Right? Stop and see them as a human being. I know you are there. That's a very powerful statement. Whatever it is, even with the checkout person at the store, to look at them and go, I see you. You know, it's not just the checkout guy. It's not just the bag guy. It's a human being. I know you are there is an acknowledgement that we are in the presence of another human being. And how much more so for the people we live with, the people we consider family, friends, loved ones. How often do we just look at them with those eyes? I know you are there. And then the second part, and I am happy. I'm happy that you're in my life. Even if you're a pain at times, I am happy you're in my life. I am happy. I am very happy. Thank you for being in my life. Whatever it is, right? Right? Steve, you're a professor, right? You look at your students and go, yeah, right? Just to stop and go, wow, yeah. I mean, how could you be a professor if you didn't have any students? You'd be lost, right? Go to class, nobody there. Just Steve talking philosophy to an empty room. It would get old quickly, wouldn't it? Yeah. Oh, thank you for being here. Yeah. Because of you, I can, you know, share. But all of us have that. All of us at home, with friends, people, you know, we go through life and there are people who wait on us and people who do this and that, you know. How often do we stop and look at them and go, I know you are there. I know you are there means I see you. To do that, we have to what? We have to stop and look and say, oh, how wonderful. How wonderful. You know, and you don't just have to do this to human beings. You can do them to flowers, sky, children you see in the park, dogs, birds. I see you. And it makes me happy. But first we have to stop, don't we? And many of us never stop. We're always... That's why we practice walking meditation. So we learn how we can walk and be present. So when we look, we can really see. But we have to stop. So when we stop, we can hear sounds and know what they are. We stop. We hear birds. How wonderful. Makes us happy. Flowers make us happy. Sky make us happy. Clouds make us happy. Children make us happy. Food, beautiful vegetables and fruits. And this. Right? I see you. You know, but we're too busy, aren't we? We're adults, and we got important things to do. We got important dramas that we're carrying around with us, and we got all kinds of worries, and we got to figure out, you know, long-term care. I mean, we just who has time for it, right? You see, I mean, we have to stop. See again, you know, the woman who came to, you know, did she see you as a human being? Did she stop? Or were you just somebody to sell a product to? You know? Now again, it doesn't mean she couldn't have done both, doesn't it? Right? How often do we invite people to step out of roles? Right? Just what if you'd said to that, she's a woman? What if you're the long care, or is a... Who came to your place and but?
It was a woman who had just graduated from USA. Right. We talked an hour and a half about.
Okay.
Her.
All right. Good. So, but you know, yeah. Just you know, so, yeah. All right. Watch you. Just for a moment. Watch you. Can we just put down the long-term insurance stuff and just tell me about you? You know, just tell me about you. Because I see. I'm here with a human being. I appreciate your going on about long-term care, and that's thank you, but I want to know you. I know you are there. See, a lot of times it's like, I know you're there, but we have to kind of knock a bit. Anybody home? Outside of the projection, behind the mask, behind the role, there's somebody there. I know you're there. And it makes me happy to know you're there. So these are very beautiful. I am here for you. And secondly, I know you are there, and I am happy. Happiness comes from knowing you're there, that you're in my life, that we're present to each other. So it's just about 8:30. Any discussion on this, or any disagreement with this, or clarity about how to practice this? I mean, these are practices. I mean, I am here for you will revolutionize your relationships. I know you are there and I am very happy. Not quite as powerful, but good. Good practice. I am here for you is, that's the bomb. Any questions or comments on I am here for you, I know you are there, and I am very happy? Good. So whoever's in charge next week, please ask everybody how they practiced. I am here for you, and I know you are there, and I am very happy. Okay. So again, any comments or questions?